Would you join me in prayer? May the words of my mouth and the meditation of each heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. When evening had come, and since it was the day of preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, who was also himself waiting expectantly for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. When Pilate learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the body to Joseph. Then Joseph bought a linen cloth, and taking down the body, wrapped it in the linen cloth and laid it in the tomb that had been hewn out of the rock. He then rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where the body was laid. That's where we left the story. But that's not where the story ends. It's early in the morning, in the dark before the dawn. A rooster crows, and not for the first time. Even so, she's the only one awake. She tiptoes around the house, gathering her things so as not to disturb the women, or the men and the children. She pours a cup of tea and stirs it gently, more out of habit than of any sort of purpose. Her eyes close one last time as she prepares herself for the day to come. It's early in the morning, in the dark, before the dawn. And there's work to be done. So she double checks her basket for the oil, the perfume, the spices that she needs. As she does so, she smiles to herself. She had overheard someone say once that the wise people who came to see Jesus after he was born, that they had brought similar types of gifts. Her breath catches just thinking about it as that macabre irony settles in. She checks on the kids one last time. They're still sleeping. She quietly leaves and sets off toward the tomb. The streets are silent, save for a cricket chirping here and there off in the distance. She walks carefully, so as not to trip over a rock or a root. As she gets closer, a sense of dread washes over her. She was hoping it was a dream, that she would wake up and everything would go back to normal, back to the way it should be. It's early in the morning, in the dark before the dawn. She's almost there when she meets her friends, Mary, the other Mary, Joanna, a couple of other mutual friends. These women have met over the past few years as they have been following Jesus in the way. They've come to know each other. They've gone through hard things together. And here they are again together once more. Now, usually when they were all in the same place, there was abundant laughter, close conversation. But today they walk in silence, side by side. It's early in the morning, in the dark before the dawn. Sure, some have told them that they're foolish. Yesterday, the day after the worst thing had happened, the other women at the well told them that they would be better off just washing their hands of this Jesus fellow. It's time to move on with their lives. And for a moment, she wondered if maybe they were right. Her heart starts racing as she gets closer. She can feel a tear or two starting to sting at the corner of her eyes. That's how grief feels. It stings. Even so, she doesn't slow down. Grit, resilience, these women are no strangers to hard work. They are ready to do the work that grief requires. So she starts rehearsing in her own mind what needs to be done. They'll have to work together if they're going to get that stone rolled away, and then they can each take turn with the fragrant perfumes and the spices working from head to toe. She wasn't really sure what would happen after that. They all had chores to do, of course, but she imagined that they would gather at one of their homes and share in some tea, some figs, before they go on with their day. She blinks. Hard. The tomb has come into view, but something's out of place. Literally, the stone that had been rolled across the entrance to the tomb has been moved. This is not the way it's supposed to be. The stone wasn't there, but she knows that they had to have been up the earliest. They had to have gotten there first. So her heart begins to race. Her mouth is as dry as her palms are sweaty. She enters the tomb and stares. He isn't here. There's no body. It's early in the morning, in the dark, before the dawn. She hears voices, but they must be in her head. "Why do you look for the living among the dead?" the voices say. She turns and sees two men sitting there. Had they been the ones to roll away the stone? She looks down, fearful. Then she hears another voice, this one fainter but just as clear. "The Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified, and on the third day rise again." Jesus' own words, words that didn't make any sense when he said them. But now she understands. He is not here. He has risen. Early, in the morning, in the dark, before the dawn. This is where Easter really begins, when night is at its deepest, its darkest, in those hours just before the dawn. The greatest love story that our world has ever known begins with fear, bewilderment, pain, and the profound loss of certainty. The privilege of knowing the whole story and having the benefit of years of clarification and context, and for some traditions, creeds, all of that comes much later. Pastor Debbie Thomas calls what comes first many variations on the same theme: hope in the midst of struggle. As in, here's what happens when ordinary people brush up against an extraordinary God. Here's what it looks like when broken, hungry humanity encounters a bizarre and inexplicable love in the half-light of dawn. Friends, the resurrection happened in total darkness. Sometime in the pre-dawn hours of that Sunday morning, a great mystery transpired in secret. No sunlight illumined the event. No human being witnessed it. And even now, 2,000 some years later, our human narrative really cannot contain it. A complete understanding of Jesus' resurrection slips beyond our grasp over and over again because it's a mystery known only to God. When the resurrection, whatever the resurrection was and is, its fullness lies in holy darkness, shielded from our eyes. All we can know is that somehow, some way, in an ancient tomb on a starry night, God worked in secret to bring life out of death. Somehow, some way, from the heart of misunderstanding and misery, condemnation and despair, God enacted redemption. Mary Magdalene and the women see Jesus first because they show up in the early morning, in the dark before the dawn. Peter shows up much later in the day. The sun has come out and the women have given their report. An idle tale, the men call it. Perhaps because we don't always believe women, perhaps because the story itself was so unbelievable. So the women went with Joseph of Arimathea to his field where Jesus was buried, and they saw the tomb. They had seen for themselves how Jesus' body had been laid in it. And then they go away. They go away and they prepare the perfumes and the spices and the oils, and they rest. They rest on the Sabbath. But as soon as the Sabbath has ended, they are right back where they were, back to that place where they had left Jesus. They remain throughout it all, present to what is real, to what is actually happening. And they do so even when what is real feels unbearable, even when it seems impossible that tomorrow could be any different than today. As much as I don't like to admit it, clarity, hope, and healing come when I am willing to linger in the hard and barren places, in the places where the usual platitudes fall flat, in the places where easy answers prove inadequate. Jesus comes in the dark before the dawn, and sometimes it takes us a while to recognize him. He doesn't look the way we expect him to look. He doesn't allow us to cling to our old ideas, our tired assumptions. And then he disappears again, just as we grab hold of him. But he comes. He comes and he calls us by name. And in that instant, we recognize both ourselves and him. In a beautiful essay on the resurrection, theologian and writer Chris Barnes reflects, "The question that Easter asks of us is not, do we believe in the doctrine of resurrection? Frankly," he says, "that is not particularly hard. What the Gospels ask is not, do you believe, but have you encountered the risen Christ?" Preacher and professor Fred Craddock says it this way, "Matters of faith are never finally proven, nor faith generated by an incontrovertible argument. No, faith is communicated by witness." And here's the thing. We each witness what happened to Jesus a little bit differently. We don't all have the same experience of the risen Christ. Some of us show up prepared and end up surprised. Some of us run headlong to see for ourselves. Some of us are amazed. Some of us are terrified. Some of us are confused. Some of us resist belief. In other words, we come to the empty tomb as ourselves, warts and all. We don't shed our baggage ahead of time. It just barges right on in with us, and it shapes our perception and our conclusion. We find in the empty tomb the hope we need for our own struggles, our own losses, our own trauma, our own disappointments, our grief. And what we know about faith in Jesus Christ is that it begins in the rich, fertile ground of our own hearts, of our own stories. Whatever alleluias and hallelujahs Christ is risen, we shout on Easter Sunday, they must begin with a willingness to linger in the garden, desolate and alone, listening for the sound of our name, spoken in love. So as we mine our hearts to become more intimate, more familiar with our own stories of that pre-dawn darkness, as we mine our hearts for those stories of our own encounters with the risen Christ, we start to open up cracks and crevices. Cracks and crevices that are big enough to allow our story to flow out, and cracks and crevices that are big enough for the stories of others to flow in. Now, this type of witness isn't easy. It's not automatic. It requires risk. Risk of hanging on to hope when all else fails. The risk of showing up before the dawn when it's darker and more easy to find our way. The risk of turning toward the one who calls our name and recognizing him for the Redeemer he is. And so often, we don't truly understand what it is we're seeing until we crawl back into that tomb. Which is to say, no matter how slippery hope is to hold on to, no matter how long and dark the night seems, no matter how hard we have to strain to hear the one who calls us by name, no matter how deep of a grave we've dug for ourselves, our story is not yet finished. Because as Nadia Bolz-Weber says, God simply keeps reaching down into the dirt of humanity and resurrecting us from the graves we dig for ourselves through our violence, our lies, our selfishness, our arrogance, and our addiction. God reaches down and scoops us up and keeps loving us back to life over and over and over again. Because he is risen,